This is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Michelle Norris. A novel television program made its debut 50 years ago. The premise was simple. What if real CBS News correspondents, armed with microphones and cameras, were around to cover some of history's greatest moments? The program ran for 5 years and lived on for years after in reruns. It gave viewers dramatized live coverage of events like the duel between Aaron Burr and Alexander Hamilton or the Salem witch trials. The series also had a secret it could not reveal. More on that in a minute. The host of You Are There, as well as one of its correspondents, was our commentator, Walter Cronkite.
Walter Cronkite reporting, April 1861. 7 southern states have seceded from the Union. Others may follow. Civil war may be the consequence, and Fort Sumter in Charleston Harbor...
Walter Cronkite reporting, May 29th, 1431. For more than 3 months now, a young shepherdess has been on trial for her life. She's a 19-year-old girl named Joan of Arc, who came...
Those stories and others like them, I suppose, give new meaning to the phrase veteran news anchor, an expression I've been hearing for a good many years now. But in 1953... both the word anchor and the role itself were still young and evolving. At the 1952 political conventions, I had sat in a small studio providing perspective to details reported from the floor. This became the familiar ritual I would use to open and close every episode of You Are There, as I would set the scene and say,
"All things are as they were then, except
You Are There."
You Are There had its beginnings in radio in 1947. When the radio version ended in 1950, planning began to bring it to television. When producer Charlie Russell asked me to host the TV version, I was under no illusions that it would enhance my credentials as a journalist. I was being brought in as an actor to trade on my newly acquired fame and authority as a convention anchor. But television brought a problem, too. Should CBS newsmen wear costumes when reporting from ancient Rome or Greece? Finally, someone came up with the simplest of solutions. They would ask their questions off-screen, and actors would respond directly to the camera. You Are There also had a less visible problem, one so potentially dangerous that many, including myself, were not permitted to know about it. It was the blacklist. The reassuring thing about a hot war is that you know where the bullets are coming from. But the Cold War offered no such clarity, especially when politics became a barometer of loyalty. Blacklisting was television's way of fighting a contest of ideas, not bullets. The blacklist was as secret and covert as the subversives it imagined itself to be fighting. It assumed that communism was an intellectual contagion, and that it could infect Americans through television if the medium were not properly screened for subversive ideas. It kept many talented people from working without ever telling them why. In presenting the complexities of history on You Are There, Charlie Russell, our producer, was not willing to play the blacklist game or concern himself with the politics of his talent. When the 3 most literate New York writers available for the series turned out to be blacklisted, he secretly hired them. For the first 2 seasons, virtually every You Are There script was written by either Walter Bernstein, Arnold Manoff, or Abraham Polonsky, none of whom I ever knew or was permitted to meet. You Are There never treated the blacklist directly, of course, or the larger issue of McCarthyism, and nobody believed it should, but history was rich with striking parallels. It offered no shortage of ways to deal obliquely with matters of dissent and intellectual freedom. In our first 6 months alone, we tackled Joan of Arc, the Salem witch trials, the Magna Carta, and the Dreyfus case.
399 B.C., the death of Socrates. You Are There.
But ironically, the farther back into history we went, the more contemporary the parallels became.
Walter Cronkite reporting, the Hellenistic world is waiting the climax of the trial and condemnation of the philosopher Socrates, charged with corruption of the youth and refusing to recognize the accepted gods of the state.
In the 14th show of the series, You Are There treated the death of Socrates. He was the perfect hero for the 1950s because he would not back down. None of us had any doubt what the program was really about. When judged guilty on an almost evenly divided vote,
he refused to propose a reasonable fine as his punishment. He thus made a compromise impossible. Now, as the moment of doom is rapidly approaching, the strange fact is that no one in Athens wants Socrates to die. And his friends, we are told, are still desperately trying to find some way out of this tragic entanglement and save Socrates from the fatal cut.
Those of us who were not involved in the writing clearly understood that much care was being taken in measuring how veiled such speeches could be. When I would ask Charlie Russell about meeting the writers, he kept putting me off, which was easy enough for him to do at that stage of my career. But it was not so easy when CBS executives demanded to meet them. That's when he began to bring in fronts. These were writers who agreed to stand in for the real authors at network script meetings to protect their identity. They were a courageous lot who put their own careers at risk. It was only when one of Charlie's fronts became too talkative at a CBS luncheon that I accidentally began to realize what was afoot.
April 30th, 1633. The crisis of Galileo.
If Socrates had been a heroic, metaphoric victim, the drama of Galileo was not only a tragic one. It also was a story that specifically confronted the rituals of congressional inquisitions more directly than any other program we did. In Abraham Polonsky's script, the 17th century astronomer found himself weighing the consequences of the choices before him, choices all too familiar to Polanski and others in the mid-20th century.
Do you believe in God?
Indeed I do. I'm no heretic.
Then you must understand. The preaching of your doctrine weakens the faith of the common man.
But I have no doctrine. And never has one single common man come to me to protest that I weakened his faith in God.
If you persist in his error and defy the discipline of your church, then the Pope will abandon you. And it is more than a form of speech that you must make. For the Holy Office will test the inner intention of your mind if you do not convince them of your willingness to submit and make your admission in full faith.
As Cardinal Barberini leaves Galileo behind here, we take you now to the Tuscan Embassy. Come in, Mike Wallace.
This is Mike Wallace in the patio of the Tuscan Embassy in Rome. Ambassador Nicolini is on his way here, and those two...
It was Ambassador Nicolini who would test the inner intentions of Galileo's mind in a manner that had become alarmingly common in 1953.
Galileo, I have here to hand a letter that you wrote on the 21st of December, 1613. I quote, "The same God who has endowed us with senses, reason, and understanding does not permit us to use them. That, it seems, I am not bound to believe. I should like to remind you, Galileo, that you were admonished by the church against such opinions and gladly accepted the warning at that time. The question is, have you returned to such opinions in the interim?"
It is impossible to think without bitterness that the fruits of my labors should now be branded as criminal.
But you haven't answered the question.
What I wrote then is not my opinion now.
I have here a still earlier letter of yours written to Kepler on August 4th, 1597, in which you say, "Many years ago, I became a convert to the opinions of Copernicus, and yet you pretend here to say that your use of the Copernican doctrines are a mere hypothesis."
That letter was written very long ago.
So the question is, what was in your mind when you disobeyed the admonition of this holy office and published your dialogues?
I didn't mean to defend or preach those notions which the Holy Office, by its injunctions, had condemned.
And you no longer hold to those opinions on the mobility of the earth and its motion about the sun?
I do not.
In that scene, Polanski brought art and reality together and caught the darker side of American political life in the Cold War. How real was it? Well, about the same time as the Galileo telecast, CBS producer Joe Wershba shot film of Senator Joseph McCarthy questioning a latter-day Galileo named Reed Harris of the U.S. Information Agency. The two inquisitions seem perilously interchangeable. You've heard the art. Listen to the reality. First, Senator McCarthy.
Your name is Reed Harris.
That's correct.
You wrote a book in 32, is that correct?
Yes, I wrote a book.
I'm going to ask you again. At the time you wrote this book, did you feel that professors should be given the right to teach sophomores that marriage, let me quote, should be cast out of our civilization as antiquated and stupid religious phenomena? Was that your feeling at that time?
My feeling was that professors should have the right to express their considered opinions on any subject, whatever they were, sir.
Well, then let's continue to read your own writings. And
21 years ago, again, I resent the tone of this inquiry very much, Mr. Chairman.
The treatment of Harris may have been mild compared to the humiliation of Galileo, whose tragedy Polanski dramatized in this recantation.
I'm here to obey.
Read that, Galileo. Do you wish to read the document aloud?
Yes.
Then kneel.
I, Galileo Galilei.
Galileo is recanting completely. Galileo. The news of this will come as a severe blow to the thousands of followers of the new science.
But that if I shall know any heretic, I will denounce him to the Holy Office, or to the Inquisitor and Ordinary.
The works of Galileo were smuggled out of Italy and based on the great experiments of this Italian, the Englishman Newton, laid the foundations for modern science.
The identity of the men who wrote those words remained a closely guarded secret within the You Are There production unit for years. As far as I know, the only ones who knew at the time were Charlie Russell and Sidney Lumet, who directed the first two seasons before moving on to a brilliant film career. Bill Dozier, the executive producer, probably knew, but no one whispered a word about it to me. It wasn't distrust, it was protection. They didn't want to involve me, or any news correspondent, in a conspiracy against CBS policy that could be dangerous to a young career. In 1955, You Are There went from live to film. But with a new producer and director in charge, the original writers left the program. Subjects turned softer, perhaps at CBS's request, and the show lost a bit of its edge. In the fall of 1956, it left the air, and I went on to other assignments. But no program I ever did would produce such a famous signature line or one quoted back to me more often, even today. What kind of a day was it? A day like all days, filled with those events that alter and illuminate our time. And you were there. For NPR News, this is Walter Cronkite.
And you can hear more of Walter Cronkite's essays for NPR at our website, npr.org. You're listening to All Things Considered from NPR News.